Next item is item number 18, results of the 2013 Puget Sound Dungeness crab fishery. This is a briefing. Rich Childers, our Puget Sound Shellfish Manager, and Mike Sensi, Deputy Chief of Enforcement.
Madam Chair, can I make a comment about the Skagit?
Sure.
I heard it characterized as a special place, and I think that there must also be a fountain of youth, because I hope I look that good at 71.
Yeah, really. Fountain.
Oh, yes. It's too late, Mike.
My mother said I had a face for radio, so.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. My name's Rich Childers. I'm the shellfish manager for the fish program in the department, and this will be a joint effort between the fish program and enforcement on this, and this is the third year that we've reported back as per the Puget Sound policy directs us to, that we provide the commission with a report on the performance of the fishery. And I have to say, before we dive into this, that this is one fishery, and I don't know how the other programs, Habitat and Wildlife and so forth, work with the enforcement program, but we work so well together in this fishery and what we've accomplished. And I just want to congratulate my colleague, Deputy Chief Sensi, on that. And it's quite a success story from that angle on how we jointly manage, enforce, and carry forward with this fishery. So the outline here, what we're going to present, this will look familiar to some of you because we're kind of providing the same information that we have since 2011. That's when our first report was provided to the commission, and we basically update the information to show you how we're doing. And we're going to quickly go through some key elements of the policy, policy 3609, which is Puget Sound crab policy, and then look at the performance of the both harvest groups, all harvest groups, treaty, state commercial, state recreational, and look at our 2013 recreational education and outreach program, and then the compliance information that we collected both as staff and then in more detail from Deputy Chief Sensi in the enforcement program. So the policy for Puget Sound crab was revised and adopted in October of 2010. And as I mentioned, in that policy, it states that we will do an annual report. So this is the third year running for a report. There are provisions and measures in the policy for conservation and protection of the resource up front and foremost. It does provide for both commercial and recreational opportunity in the state fisheries. And it maintains a base recreational fishery. And I would emphasize a base, and we've been adhering pretty closely to that so far, but we may deviate a bit this upcoming year to provide some additional opportunity to the recreational fishery. But that base recreational fishery is a July through Labor Day, 5 day a week fishery, including weekends. So it's basically closed on Tuesday and Wednesday and open Thursday through Monday of each week. That we have a winter season that would start in October or later, depending on how much allocation is left. And it's a 7 day a week fishery during the winter months, because we don't want to have to deal with the weather issues around getting gear out of the water and so forth. And that's worked out quite well. Anglers, crab fishers, they like that at least 1 day a week closure to get all the gear out of the water, and kind of gives a clean slate and it starts over. And then it's a 5 crab per day daily limit in the recreational fishery. And then we also continue to implement an education and outreach program with our partner organizations and with enforcement in particular, and that is showing some real success that I'll go into a little more detail on. So real quick, by way of review, we have 7 management regions, and most of these regions line up exactly with our marine areas. So you might be familiar with marine areas versus regions, but in this fishery as well as shrimp, we have to talk regions. So when I'm speaking of regions, I'll try to have the map up there so you know what we're referring to. And in the policy, it provides for commercial and recreational opportunity in regions 1, 2, and 3, so kind of the northern part, but reserves regions 4, 5, 6, and 7, the more southern Hood Canal areas, for recreational only opportunity. We have annual quotas that we set pre-season, that we've been doing that for now 12 years, and that seems to work out well. That meets our equal sharing mandates with the tribes and so forth, as well as provide some known and stable fisheries for all parties. The shares are established annually, and the quotas and shares are annually through our management agreements with the tribes. And for the most part, we have management regions that span June through May. So that's why a lot of the references, it will be a 2012 and 13 season or 2013-14. They're not an annual. They'll span several years. So now we'll jump into the commercial and recreational fisheries and the performance over the last few years, as well as this shows the total state and tribal catch since 1991. And you can see, looking all the way over to the right, 2013, it was down a bit from our peak in 2011, but still above a 9 million pound fishery in total. And if you look at the state tribal comparison, we are definitely right in there, meeting that 50-50 mandate sharing objective. This is the same information, but it breaks it down between our recreational and commercial fisheries, estate fisheries. And you can see that the recreational fishery last year, just above 2 million pounds, about 2.1 million pounds, and the commercial fishery is about 2.5 million pounds. Thank you. So this is always an interesting depiction of the fishery, and you can see where Region 1, the North Sound, or Marine Area 7, you may know it, is where the bulk of the crab come out of. There's a very large quota there, and that's where most of the commercial catch comes out of that region, about 1.6, 1.7, sometimes upwards of 2 million pounds of crab just out of Region 1. The recreational fishery, full season, winter and summer, catches just above 500,000 pounds or so in that region, and the remainder of the state share goes to the commercial fishery. Again, emphasizing the southern marine areas and Hood Canal, 4, 5, 6, and 7 are 100% recreational harvest. There's no commercial fishery in those regions. So this will start getting in a little bit of our report card, looking at the recreational and commercial fishery openings. We did have commercial fishery openings in all the regions where the policy allows, regions 1, 2, and 3. We had recreational openings for the summer fishery in all regions in Puget Sound. And we had winter recreational openings in all regions except for 4 and 6. And the reason regions 4 and 6 did not open up for recreational fishing in the winter is because 100% of the state share was taken in the summer fishery. There has not been a winter recreational fishery in 4 and 6 in a few years, but it looks like this next year we're probably going to see quotas increased. We're working with the tribes on that, so I anticipate we will have some level of recreational opportunity in those areas in 2014. So this is our catch record card compliance return rate report card, and it's getting a little bit busy. I remember sitting here a few years ago, we only had a couple of rows of information on there, but back in 2007 is when we really split out and had summer and winter catch record cards and so forth. And you can see we continue to tick up on our return rate, particularly in the winter. We're 66% return, and that's internet and returns combined, and we gained another percent for the summer. We would like to see these numbers, both summer and winter, get above 70-80%. Not sure if that's going to happen, but can't really complain on those. The return rates are pretty good. We get some really good estimates of the fishery from those. This is an interesting piece that we started looking at. I think the first time I presented this might have been 2012. But if you look at the far right, that's a percentage of new crabbers entering the fishery. So what we started looking at, for instance, in 2013, we said, well, of all the crab endorsements sold, how many of those to individuals had never got a crab license before? And it's consistently around 30%. Although the number, the total endorsement sales are staying relatively stable. So we're having this 30% or so turnover rate every year. And in some ways, that's a blessing, because if we didn't have that dropout rate and we had that 30% increase, we'd have a real problem. But it's consistently looking at about 30% new crabbers coming into the fishery every year.
Commissioner Smith?
Thanks. Do we keep data on how many are out of state or the new recruitment from out of state?
Yes. I don't present that, but I can get you that. Yeah, we have very detailed information. We have, you know, the out of state, the 3-day licenses, the temporaries, and so forth. We can break all that down.
I was just thinking, part of the new governor's task force on tourism and recreation, that sort of data could be,
yeah,
value added.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Holtzman.
Back a slide or so, you were talking about the return rate on your, you have catch cards.
Catch record cards, yes.
In my hunting world, you do not get another license until you return those. Why can't you make it like that?
What we do have, and we started this, I believe it was 2009, rather than you cannot get a license the following years, there's a fail to, a penalty, basically, for fail to return. It's a $10 penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And that did, I think it was probably around 2008 or 9, and you can see that's where we initially had that jump in return rates. So when we went, and this is legislation, anything that deals with fines and penalties and fees is through the legislature, and we originally, when we implemented the $10 penalty, we were working with advisory groups, and that was one suggestion that, well, why don't we just make, if you don't return a card, you don't get a license the next year. We didn't feel we would get the support for that, and we ended up going to the legislature and asking for a $25 administrative penalty for not returning, and the legislature granted us $10. So that's kind of where we are. I don't think we would have got it through with fail to record, you don't get a license. That would be a tough one.
All I know is in the hunter reporting, people are a lot better about doing it now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So this is always an interesting, I think, table. It shows how many of the commercial licenses, and it is a limited entry commercial fishery since 1981, and there's 250 transferable permits as of 1981. There's now 249. It's been 249 for a number of years. Someone owned a license back in the late 80s, and they retired passed something and they never renewed it, so that one just basically went away. So in the commercial fishery, you can hold multiple licenses as an individual. So this shows how many of those licenses are owned, how many own two licenses, one license, three licenses, and so forth. So basically, 77 of the licenses are owned by single individuals. And then there's 46 individuals that own two permits, six individuals that own three permits or more, and there's eight individuals that own more than four permits. And we still have a company up in the Blaine area that owns about 25 permits on a single individual, and that's down in that greater than four. And they lease those permits out to commercial fishers. So again, limited entry. In total, all those 249 permits are held by 137 individuals. This shows the price, the X vessel value in total since 1990 for the commercial fleet. There was a very substantial uptick this year in 2013, and that's the result of that continued demand for that high-quality live export product. And we saw the highest, again, another highest average price per crab in Puget Sound. We actually saw just recently, we're still finishing up a couple of areas that the price is almost $9 a pound to the commercials. It may have topped $9 a pound by now. So becoming very, very valuable, and that's a really good news, because there was a reduction in the catch overall with the change in the policy, but what that's been offset by is the great price that the commercial fishery is getting for the product. So now we're going to switch and talk about education outreach. I'm going to do a little bit about the education outreach piece and turn it over to Deputy Chief Sensi to talk about their education and outreach, which is a little bit stronger stick than what we do as management. So we have a long-term goal when the policy was revised in 2010, we really wanted to improve the compliance in the fishery. We were having some real problems with retention of undersized crab and fail to record and so forth. So we implemented what we call the Know Before You Go policy or process, where we were trying to educate the fishers on what they're supposed to do before they go. We have a lot of partners that we work with. Enforcement, as I've mentioned, we work with Puget Sound Anglers, the Coastal Conservation Association, the Northwest Marine Trades Association, our advisory groups, and Beach Watchers. WSU Beach Watchers have been playing a really good partner role for the last few years with us. And they're also, we work with the County Marine Resource Committees that are basically organized and funded through the Northwest Straits Commission. So we have two different types of goals or focus. We have the resource conservation violation, which is possession of undersized male crab or female crab and no use of rock cord on the pots. And then the allocation piece is exceeding the daily limit and fail to record and report catch. And the fail to record is our big one that we've been really tackling and trying to get that catch reporting rate up. And then the closed season crabbing, which Deputy Chief Sensi might speak a little bit more to. So our program consists of, we still have, and I happen to have one in my pocket here, we have the Puget Sound Crab brochure that this has been, I think, a really big help. And we mail that. We pull all the households that have purchased crab endorsements, and we try to do it right before the fishery opens, and we mail one of those to the households. And everything you need to know about crabbing in Puget Sound is in that little three-fold brochure. We also are distributing those to the licensed dealers and our education and outreach partners. And we're going through, I mean, just tens and tens of thousands of those. We put together 11,000 information packets, and those are something, again, we're working with beach watchers and so forth on, and those have sample rock cords in them, calipers, a brochure, and a little waterproof plastic rule guide that can be put on a boat and used as a reference. We continue to work with beach watchers and awarded, continue to grant with them another $25,000 for their helping us with this program. We covered some but not all of the boat shows and sportsman shows over in Seattle area. We do continue to do our newspaper coverage and radio coverage right before the season opens. And our offload site interviews, which I'll speak a little bit more detail with, we're still putting staff effort into those and getting crabbers as they're coming off the water. And then, of course, the enforcement emphasis patrols. Did a couple of facelifts on our website, which is very popular. Most people are referring to the website because you can get very good pictures and maps and so forth and details of what's open. And then another thing that we do that I think has really helped our return rate is we do the reminder postcards. At the end of the summer season and at the end of the winter season, we send, again, every household that has a crab endorsement a little postcard reminder saying it's time to report. We emphasize the internet reporting over the return, and that's why we get a much higher rate, more than twice people reporting their catch on our internet site versus mailing the card in. So this is a poster that was developed primarily by the beach watchers and the marine resource committees. And they have this on a card, and it's a poster that's put around. And I think this is a very well done poster, looking at some of those, but really emphasizing that rock cord use. And basically say, you know, if you want to, you know, protect this resource, use the rock cord. It was all coordinated through the Beach Watchers program, and again, we help fund that to the level that we can through the crab endorsement account. They provided training and coordination of 56 volunteers last summer. They helped us assemble 11,000 of these information packets that have the brochure, rock cord, calipers, and so forth. And they contacted 8,390 crabbers face-to-face at offload sites and marinas and shows and so forth. And 49,000 indirectly. And I'm not sure what they mean by indirectly on that. They gave me that number, but I think it's through maybe mailers and so forth. So we continue to do, as staff, our offload site surveys. And again, this goal is to try to contact anglers when they're done for the day, and it's not an enforcement contact, it's more of an education outreach contact where they are just looking at, okay, do you have crab in your possession? Did they fill the catch record card out right? And if not, they try to work with them to show them how to fill it out properly. The goal is to collect CRC compliance data after the crabbing trips are completed. And as Deputy Chief Sensi will say, most of their contacts are on the water, so people are still actively crabbing. We had 26 survey locations throughout Puget Sound that were randomly selected. That's a change this year. We did more of a random time and date selection on that. We had the surveys distributed throughout Puget Sound for the summer months at the height of the fishery. There was 103 surveys conducted at these sites and 819 crab fishers interviewed. And of those, 758 were successful crabbers, meaning they had at least one crab in their possession. And we measured 3,011 crabs for size compliance. This shows similar information since 2010. We're continuing to, again, see improvements in all areas. And you see the possession of undersized crab and the possession of female crab is very low. So couldn't ask for anything better than that, in my opinion. Exceeding daily limit, also low. Catch record card in possession, 99%. That's a real gain right there. I mean, they couldn't ask for anything better than that. Our CRC violation, the fail to record piece, is also improving, but we're still seeing 9% of the crab, they'll be in possession, have a catch record card, but they're not recorded. So we're still, that's something we still have to work on, is getting them to record. Now, an interesting side note to this is what we started noticing is quite often, anglers will have crab in possession and not have them recorded, but they have previous trips recorded on their catch record card. So we kind of asked the question, it's like, well, it's not immediately, so when are they recording? After they eat them? After they clean them? But we made an assumption several years ago that if they're done crabbing for the day and they're pulling their boat out of the water, if they haven't recorded by then, they most likely will not record. But that apparently is not true. Some level of them are recording later, maybe when they get home. So I'm going to turn this over to Deputy Chief Sensi, and he's going to talk about the enforcement compliance work of 2013.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Director Anderson, Deputy Director Storr, good morning. I want to reciprocate with some kudos. We have an incredible relationship with our shellfish managers and the fish program. When it comes to solving a problem, there's a lot of collaboration. Pretty neat when you go on a compliance patrol and a resource manager invites himself to help provide education through one mode while we're providing an education through another. And the two really do complement each other. I also want to extend a lot of thanks to the sport fishing community because they really have been helpful in increasing awareness out there. Know before you go, and they've helped perpetuate that. So we had 37 officers involved in emphasis patrols related to open crab fishing. A lot of what you're going to see here doesn't represent a lot of the closed season effort, which was also there. These numbers are representative of open seasons. And our emphasis is on the water versus dockside. Our feeling is that we can stop a lot of violations from occurring by ensuring a high level of a highly visible presence. And so some of the violations, like fail to record catch, the compliance level with that particular issue may be higher than what is represented in the enforcement statistics. And I'll explain more about that. So we checked almost 3,500 fishers, and that's a little bit down from 2012 and 2011. And you can see we checked a few less crab. I understand these inspections are pretty intrusive, our officers are professional. They try to be efficient. They understand most folks are out there operating lawfully, and we want to get out of their hair as quickly as possible. Who wants to go fishing with a game warden on their boat? So we try to get through the contact quickly, but again, they're very thorough contacts. So here's an overview of the violations, the violation rate or contact to violation ratio from the enforcement perspective. And you can see, for the most part, increases in compliance. The other area that we're focused on is ensuring that crab pots are out of the water during closed days. The fish program has really helped us leverage our minimum staffing by providing personnel and conducting joint patrols. We've also been partnering with tribal law enforcement to conduct gear sweeps. Mr. Childers frequently pushes for at least season-end closures that are consistent across the board, so that we don't have to try to pick our way through gear on the water to determine whether it's out there closed season or not. If it's there and everybody has it closed, then the landscape's pretty obvious for enforcement. And it's a proactive approach. The theory is if you can get on top of that gear quickly, then it doesn't become lost, abandoned, derelict, and cause a greater conservation problem. And so Mr. Childers and I emphasized some presence in this area in 2011. We continue to focus our recovery efforts and again try to keep that gear from being derelict. We don't know what percentage of those pots are lost or abandoned or simply fishing closed season. Tough to tell the difference in all cases. Some cases we are able to determine that. So the factors that contribute to the derelict gear problem are obviously lost and abandoned crab pots. There's closed season poaching, of course. Quite a bit of this occurs by using a long line strategy. So there are no surface buoys. Crab pots are connected to one another in a string, and GPS coordinates are taken, and then they're recovered with the use of grappling hooks. And we've had a problem on our border with Canadian fishers fishing our waters closed season. We partner with the Coast Guard and our Border Patrol officials, and in some cases tribal law enforcement agencies to deal with those issues. And we've focused enough attention, at least on the border, over the last 5 years now, where there are a lot of law enforcement personnel from other agencies looking out for our interests. The Border Patrol made an incredible case last year that turned into a vessel pursuit, and it was great fun for the Border Patrol folks. But they served those folks up to us at about 2 a.m. in the morning and resulted in a vessel seizure, and sent a pretty strong message to other folks that might think about doing the same thing. Mr. Childers spoke to the importance of ensuring rot cord or biodegradable cotton. on crab pots. If they're lost and abandoned, they don't continue to ghost fish. There's some, you know, there's the ability for animals to escape. We do see gear that's out of compliance, but we have a fairly new tool over the last couple of years, and that is a regulation and statute that makes it unlawful to possess a crab pot on board your vessel that's not compliant with gear rules. So I don't have to wait until it's deployed before I can take action. Now, we're not running around pinching people because, you know, they've stored some crab pots on their vessel that may not be fully rigged and hadn't intended to fish them yet. But if someone's coming in from the waterways with a deckload of non-compliant gear, and that could be addressed in that manner. So it's a nice little tool. So you can see the results over time with respect to the patrol days that we've invested and pots recovered. And when you look at 2013, you might be thinking, that's about half of the investment that you've made in the past. And it is. We have a lot of competing interests, and we're reminded that we need to increase our resolve to ensure that we do a good job in this particular area, because we do think that it matters. We do think that it makes a difference. The effort's worthwhile. But we also, part of the distraction is, are some of the investigations, crab-related, some of them, that we've made investments in. We have a number of violator types. There's the hardcore, the individual that, I don't know what percentage that is. It's a small percentage, I think. The individual that lays awake at night trying to figure out how to rip natural resources off and disadvantage everybody else. Then you have your opportunist. It's the individual that, with some level of police presence, probably won't violate, but if the other guy's doing it, then why not? That's a larger population than the first one. And then there's the and that's where we spend a lot of our time, the vast majority of our time, focused on the first two. And then there's the confused and uneducated. And through efforts of Mr. Childers and our stakeholders, our sports groups, volunteer groups, we're changing that. You know, we're boarding people, and I participate in a few patrols myself. We're boarding people that are much more aware of our regulations. They have a lot of the outreach material that we're handing out, that we're distributing through the mail, or that you can download off the internet. If you haven't been to the shellfish site related to crab, these folks have done an incredible job of providing educational material that's easily navigated, and it's meaningful. There's videos. I mean, if you've looked that stuff over and you still don't know what you're doing, you might want to find another hobby. I've talked to you before about how important it is to make an investment across all sectors, because they're all connected, and that disorder in one sector affects the other. You know, it's a shared resource, so we're linked in that way. We understand catch accounting is important, not just in the recreational fishery, but also in commercial fisheries as well. This case is illustrative of a catch accounting problem beyond recreational harvest cards. Sorry about the yellow standard font. It really blends in, but it was about a two-year investigation off and on, involving the unlawful trafficking in undersized, undocumented, and close-season crabs. It involved two wholesale fish dealing companies, 25 harvesters, and then 10 non-typical markets, restaurants, nail salons, teriyaki establishments. I mean, we, the underground or alleyway market for illicit shellfish is, it's a vibrant microeconomy in my view, and we're taking steps to close it down. And this is an example of that microeconomy to some extent. But we had non-tribal wholesale fish dealers operating under tribal licenses, purchasing undocumented and undersized crab from tribal members. We had harvesters selling undocumented undersized crab and halibut to undercover officers. And then we understood that this, through intelligence, law enforcement intelligence, we understood that there was this microeconomy that was predispositioned to buy illegal crab. And so we conducted some covert sales there and determined that the market was so glutted that the crab sold for what I think is a whopping deal, $1.50 to $2 each. And these crab were generally undersized crab, although there were some legal-sized crab involved as well. And I don't know if you've looked at the retail price of a crab lately, but I don't know. A crab's worth, what, $8 to $13, depending on, and Commissioner Schmitten says more. So he probably purchased a retail crab sooner than I, not too long ago. In any event, this market existed. We didn't set the price; it was already established. We were turned away a number of times, not because folks didn't want to buy from us. It was because the bad guys got there first, and their orders already had been satisfied. So we served a number of search warrants that involved also a boat and vehicle seizure and multiple suspect interviews, and a number of entities were involved in the investigation, including state, tribal, and NOAA officers. The analysis of the financial and state licensing records compared to catch reports is summarized here. At this point, we're looking at around 62,000 pounds of undocumented crab, just based on the sales to these two wholesale fish dealers that were collaborating. That doesn't involve the retail sale piece. So, obviously, there's hundreds of charges potentially here that could be filed, and we expect that to happen in the near future. These are felony level offenses, and we think that we have county prosecutors very serious about making sure that we send the message that this activity is not appropriate, it's not acceptable, and we're serious about stopping it.
So if I could, I'd like to just kind of give a summary of what we covered here real quick and then open it up for questions. So we did provide recreational opportunity throughout Puget Sound 5 days a week in the summer, and most areas did reopen for a winter recreational fishery except for regions 4 and 6, but it's looking promising that they will probably be open this next winter upcoming. Commercial fishery occurred in regions 1, 2, and 3 as specified in the policy, 2010 policy. We did have an extensive education and outreach program with a lot of partner organizations, and overall the compliance in the recreational fishery continues to improve, and I would consider it to be good to great, depending on which parameter you're looking at. We still need improvements on the catch record card for the immediate recording, and we still have some work to do, and this is what we see a lot working with the enforcement program, is a proper marking of recreational gear. We still see a lot of them that might just have a name Tim on it or something, right? And that's not adequate. We're going to continue with our close season gear removal programs. As you heard earlier, we have a new vessel coming online in the shellfish program, and that's going to be shared in partnership with enforcement to support these close season patrols. It's designed, it is a gear running boat. It will hold 50 pots or so, and we're going to use that extensively for this derelict gear removal. And I call it derelict gear, but as Deputy Chief Sensi stated, on these close season recoveries, we never will know what percentage of that gear is actually lost, abandoned, or so forth, or dispoaching. But we can assume some percentage of it is, and probably pretty high, is lost gear. So, next. With that, we will open it up for questions.
Okay, questions?
Just
okay, Commissioner Smith.
Just a comment. I've had the opportunity of two summers to go out with the deputy chief on a crab enforcement, and I've always been extremely impressed by the professionalism of the officers in the education and the enforcement. When you see the people that are boarded at the end of the boarding actually say, thank you, we appreciate what you're doing, that's a positive sign.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Rich, what do you do with the crab pots once you've collected them in these sweeps? Do we locate the owners, if possible, and return them?
So, handling evidence, if you're a law enforcement officer, is a nightmare on a good day. And if it's crab pots, if it involves crab pots, it's double the nightmare. So we do a number of things depending on the circumstances. If we can, if there's enough information on the buoy, we'll make a phone call right then and there. Oftentimes, the phone number on the buoy is the individual cell number, and they're actually on the water, and we can talk to them about the reason why we seized it in the first place. You didn't have rod cord, you know, whatever. You might be able to make an exchange at that point. Some of this, if it can't be identified, is handled as we have a statute that allows us to destroy nuisance gear and crab pots. Fishing during the closed season or a closed day that can't be identified would fall within that definition, and we could summarily destroy it. But if we know who the owner is, then we have to treat it like any other property. It has to be logged in, it has to be stored, and we have to make a contact with an individual and either seize it for forfeiture, and then there's some paperwork involved, or return the gear. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we encourage talking to individuals before we take any action, if you can identify the individual. And if there's an excuse, a plausible excuse, that might mitigate whether a citation is issued or not, that's the way we should do business. So we don't just seize gear and send tickets in the mail.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Rich, yeah, thanks for the presentation. I'm new to the commission, so I wasn't around with the when the policy was adopted 3 years ago. But I do have some questions about the commercial fishery. 249 permits. That seems like quite a few permits. How many of those would you say are active? I mean, you know, kind of, do you track? I assume you do track that. Of those 249, how many are actually making landings on an annual basis?
I don't know of any that aren't active.
So
they're all, some more than others. We do have a, going back to that, owners that own multiple permits, we do have pot limits, and that's the advantage of owning multiple permits.
Yeah, I was going to ask
that. If you have two permits, you can get two pot limits and so forth, but I do not believe we have any inactive permits.
Okay. And you've presented data about the total ex-vessel value, and there seems to be an increase, which is good. And then, so I assume then, as a corollary to that, obviously, if you've got full utilization, then the ex vessel value per permit is also increasing as well.
Correct.
Okay. Do you track any data in terms of the permit value? I mean, what sales are? Are you aware of any kind of vessel transactions?
When the commission, the department, was going through the policy review, we were looking at that very closely. And up until 2010, permits were going for 60 to 80,000 or so for a Puget. And I, to be honest, have not tracked it since 2010. So I'm not sure what they're going for.
Okay.
At this point, because as you're stating, they are transferable by the owner and they can be sold.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair, and Rich and Deputy Chief. You know, if I were a teacher, you'd be a very easy team to grade. When I look at achieving the policy goals that we set out for this program, when I look at improving enforcement, which was a very major issue when we set out for this program, you guys would get a even the failure to record, which has always been the biggest piece, improved on it 8%. This is the type of thing that you hope to achieve, but I think it comes with a lot of hard effort and management and the work on behalf of you and your people. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Yeah, I would have said similar thing. This is a policy that's working, in my view. Seeing the value, the ex-vessel value, go up at the same time, we're receiving very positive feedback from the public, the fishers, about how much opportunity they're enjoying now. This sounds like a win-win. But the peculiar thing, I have to say, too, is that at the same time, these undersized illegal crabs are only costing $1.50, $2 a crab. We're seeing the price of legal crab go up to almost $10 a pound. That's an interesting marketplace out there. Do you have a sense of why the legal crab price has gone up? Is it demand from Asia?
It is definitely that robust. I mean, my understanding is the crab coming out of Puget Sound, oftentimes they can be marketed and packed up for shipping within hours of when they're removed. So it's a very good live product. And I believe that price is a result of that demand for that live product shipped throughout the country and perhaps overseas.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Did you want to say something else?
Madam Chair, the commission and the director's office also made an investment. And that's helped us in terms of having more resources to do the job. So I remember how important that increase in the endorsement fee was to us in terms of being able to throw more weight at the problem. So, I mean, you all deserve credit as well for helping to maintain an orderly fishery or bring order to a fishery that was in a state of disorder.
Right. Okay, thank you. See you next year. We've reached a break. We're a little behind schedule, but I think we'll catch up. So let's take 15 minutes, come back at 25 after.